Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to the Weird Things podcast. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Yo. Just made it in time. Excited about the show. It's me.
And Justin Robert Young.
I'm scooting around, you guys. We're vibrating with pleasure here at the Weird Things podcast.
Oh, there you go. Man, there's a new commercial opportunity for endorsement there.
Remember when Adam and Eve was like the only ad on any podcast? This is long before everybody started hawking underwear.
Oh, sure. But like back in the day, they were the only ones courageous enough to get their too naughty for broadcast television message out, and it had to be in podcasts.
And then like the Smodcast, the Kevin Smith, I'm sure he sold a lot of fleshlights, but man, that was just like, I would pay not to have that feed.
That dude, Kevin Smith, went so hard on being the fleshlight guy. Like he took whatever brand he had and he said, "You want to know what? This is a product that not only do I believe in, I'm going to repeatedly talk about my own use of."
Did you guys hear the story about the ants?
Ants.
Right.
Moving right along.
Oh, God. I just jumped the plot. No. So let's jump right into speaking of other disasters. Here we are. It was over a week ago when the SpaceX rocket on the pad being fueled up, no engines on whatsoever, the thing blew up, right? And you would think by now we would have answers. We would know. We did a podcast middle this week. And they were still trying to figure out what's going on. Now Elon Musk has reached out to people via Twitter. He's like, "Hey, do you guys got any video or audio or anything you could share with us? Because my 14 years of stuff doing rockets and stuff, this is the biggest mystery I've ever faced." So they still don't know what happened.
Man, what a weird place we are in a world of Twitter, because I would say that Elon Musk is extraordinarily gifted at riding that line between accessibility and honesty versus projecting competence and confidence, right? And he went silent for a little bit. The media started to get a little uppity, being all like, "Oh, all of a sudden Mr. Chatterbox isn't talking." I think this is a very Elon Musk way for him to respond to it, to say, "Hey, this one's a really tricky one. Who wants to play?" And number one, it breaks, you know, the quote-unquote, you know, cone of silence for that amount of time. But also implies that we are at a level of sophistication that, like, it makes no sense that this could blow up. Which, by the way, time out on everything. If this was Trump or somebody less sophisticated, it would have been like, you know, immediate accusations of ISIS blowing it up, or asking, not asking, you know, just throwing hints out there.
Well, hold on. Before we totally get off the conspiracy train, like, I'm not saying that there is that you know, something untoward happened to this rocket, right? However, if you were somebody conspiratorially minded, the person for whom has been tremendously forward about, you know, not only when things go wrong, getting as much technical information as as possible to talk about it. The fact that he's talking about a soft, quiet bang that happens before the explosion
said in a tweet they have not ruled out
firing months.
He said they have not ruled out an external. If you go to Reddit r/SpaceX, there's a lot of interesting discussion there. They've been doing a very good job of moderating in the more insane stuff. But there's a whole post about the sound profile, breaking down the audio. There was a really good video that was taken off by a group that had the access to put a camera closer to it. And so if you look at the they show the sound signal, so you see the lines, and there's a very interesting discussion back and forth. Some people really know what they're talking about, some people who don't. And prior to the explosion, which is clearly an explosion, but you do see the fire. And then prior to that, there was a pop sound. And some people are like, is it a rifle? Is it a rifle? And people are like, no, rifle can't go that far. Well, we don't know. We don't know. So sabotage hasn't been ruled out. I mean, I think it's going to be a mundane explanation probably, but the fact that we don't know this far afterwards.
Can we get into the usual suspects? Let's assume there's weird things again. We are a celebration of letting your mind wander. There is no unnatural thought when it comes to stuff like this. But this is an industry for which SpaceX has been tremendously disruptive of. It is an industry that generates billions of dollars for a handful of people. SpaceX becoming a more unreliable purveyor of rockets. It's very much in the interest of certain companies. I don't think it's fair to kind of name them, although I'm sure everybody can think of it. But like the world of corporate dirty tricks does exist, right? This would be maybe one of the biggest scandals ever, right? If it were proven, but it is something to think about.
So that's interesting. That's actually not the direction I would have gone. It's oftentimes when people make world-altering decisions and actions. For example, a Lee Harvey Oswald or a shooting of Franz Ferdinand or whatever. It is for loosely big ideas, but oftentimes very small independent cells, unless you believe everything you hear about Lee Harvey Oswald. I don't know that the risk of being exposed as this being an act of corporate espionage would be palatable to anybody. However, I do feel like there's somebody out there fundamentally, and by the way, this is so far down the rabbit hole, and I'm really glad.
I'm really glad
we're doing it on this show and no responsible journalism.
Talking about
show.
Dobby?
I do believe somebody out there would be fired up about what SpaceX is doing, and as a lone gunman might just decide, because think about it, there's so many things you could do, and they're not in a place where they have to be thinking about military grade security for this stuff, especially, you know, when they're doing a test just on their grounds.
Well, I mean, it is on an Air Force base, and technically it is military grade security around there because it's the missile, the technology in there. May I throw out my assumption based upon my years of experience as a cruise ship magician is my assumption is it's there is some sort of valve problem, some sort of it'll be a mundane explanation like that. But if we were going to enter into the theory of who would stand the most to benefit and who had the resources and capability to benefit, I would not blame a corporation unless that corporation maybe rhymes with Roscosmos and we're talking about Russia. And I don't think Russians did. I don't think they did. Let me get very, very clear. But you're talking, okay. We do have a military, we have a military power, and we do have a Russian president who has no qualms about killing people in other countries, including the United States, who are political enemies, etc. And I've actually, not to say this is somewhat of a reminiscent of a plot from a book I may have written, it is kind of like that touches upon that in Station Breaker in the sequel, but the idea that the people principally involved in the Russian space agency are actually, if Vladimir Putin was like, yeah, you know what, we don't want to lose our space leading advantage, we have the capability to use one sniper rifle, some guy hidden to take this thing out, we do it. I don't think that happened. I think they're innocent. Let me make that very, very clear. But if I were to write a story and have the perfect bad guy, that would be it.
Well, in a
all right,
simple.
So who have we put on blast? We put on Unabomber 2. Yep. On blast, we put on other domestic competitors to SpaceX and possibly the Russian government. This is my favorite opening segment to Weird Things that we've ever done. I've never been more excited.
I mean, okay, first of all, it's not the nuttiest thing in the world to consider. It is a highly unlikely thing. But again, we're not called highly unlikely things. We're called weird things. And it gets weird when you think in terms of this being a motivated attack, if it's an attack. It's probably not an attack.
Probably not an attack. Probably 100% go to bed tonight knowing in your heart that it's probably not an attack. 100%.
99.99%.
But
yeah, my primary suspect would be the Russians.
God, that just seems...
my primary suspect would be, you know, the consortium. I mean, I feel so dirty.
Say it out loud. Say it proud. Just play a character, Justin Robert Young, who actually believes the things that you believe.
It's either, you know, Brian's man in a boat by himself, you know, like, you know, with his own high-powered sniper rifle.
Yeah.
Who knows exactly where to shoot.
Oklahoma or, bomber.
See, let me listen up. The part that makes it hard for me to accept that is that this is an Air Force base, and the range and everything out there is so. You would need somebody who would be able to evade. Okay, on one hand, you need somebody able to evade security, but they actually found like people once like living in a shack on the beach at, you know, Cape Canaveral. So that's happened. It is that you would need a lone cycle who's motivated, and two, who had the technical skills and prowess, and three, the capability, because like that rifle shot is ridiculously like beyond like record breaking attempts. So there's a lot of, if it were that, you know, if it were an inside job, easier, you know, somebody
what
put
was
a
it?
Little.
Was it Jake Busey in Contact who blew up that?
Yeah.
Jake
Busey working on it, and he's got the overalls on, and then he turns and smiles and hits the button.
Yeah. And you look at his face and you're like, dude, Jake Busey is up to no good. Stop
that
him.
That was like, I didn't know there was such a thing as a Jake Busey until I saw that. And then I'm like, did they clone Gary Busey?
Oh, no. See, I'm lucky. I had already fallen in love with him from Starship Troopers beforehand. And then I was like, hey, it's the guy from Starship Troopers.
I always remember him as in The Frighteners. He was the bad guy in The Frighteners, too.
For everybody asking, no, I did not model my hair on Jake Busey.
On Jake Busey. All right, so we got Jake Busey, the Russians, a lone gunman, or Boeing and Lockheed Martin.
Boeing and Lockheed Martin is the most ridiculous, but I kind of fall in love with that one.
I'm going to enter in another.
How is that the most ridiculous? Who would gain the most?
I mean, let me throw in another one.
Okay.
Another one. Okay. So part of this plan was to launch a SpaceCom satellite, among which would be able to provide satellite services for a Facebook project to provide internet to Africa. And it's part of a process of putting more, you know, satellites in there doing internet coverage. I'm aware of there is a semi-stealth project right now working on a very large array of small satellites in low Earth orbit to be able to blanket the Earth with internet that you would just...
Holy cow. Are you calling this a Google sabotage of Facebook action? Is that where you're headed?
Nope. Different group that has basically their plan is they want to build a constellation of satellites, and you would have a pizza box sized antenna that would provide you faster than fiber optic connections. Because the line of sight from low Earth orbit is actually a faster path than sending something through a fiber optic cable, okay? There's a company in Seattle, outside Seattle, I believe, which has been working on this, sort of a small team. They made some sort of waves up there. The leader had said, yeah, we're going to do this, and then they went very, very quiet about it.
All right.
Who am I speaking of? Elon Musk.
Wait, what? Wait, well, hold on. Just saying.
Elon would self-sabotage?
I mean, no, but if we're in the range of, you know, throwing out wild accusations.
Oh, no. This is good. You're right. This belongs on the table. This is equally as valid as any of the other theories that we've talked about so far.
Yep.
All right. So if you're just keeping track, we have a lone gunman, Jake Busey, the Russians, Boeing and Lockheed Martin, or Elon Musk himself to keep his own competing satellite service to beam internet to people
in
the game.
I just want to smash cut to him at a big wig industry party doing a line of Space Coke, which is a special blend of cocaine he had brewed in space. And he just looks, he goes, yeah, man. And then when I turn to Twitter and say, even I can't figure it out, they'll eat this up, man.
Or Jeff Bezos.
Yeah.
Bezos. Oh, man.
Bezos would be so unsubtle. He would actually fire his Blue Origin rocket into it and then be all like, oh, whoops, it was a test crash.
Yeah, no. Bezos would tweet when we know it's not him, because if he did it, then as soon as the rocket went up, he would have tweeted, looks like my competition's heating up. LOL, I'm Bezos. That's you.
He would have tweeted it 5 minutes before it happens and then just been all like, oh, did I? Oh, no. I don't know what you. Prime.
Called it.
Oh, boy. So the mystery continues. Hopefully we'll have some answers. But here's the question. Here's the question. What if a week from now, a month from now, between FAA, NASA, SpaceX, and all the experts they bring in, they still don't have an answer?
Well, then we start making up answers. That's what we do on
this. What do they do? Do they say we're going to proceed ahead with launching rockets even though we don't know what happened?
I mean, yeah, I guess the question is, does that change how we feel about them launching rockets if they can't find out what went wrong?
I mean, I would say their first job is to try to replicate results, which means build the same thing, put the same things in it, and do the same tests.
Destroy another launch pad.
I mean, well, first of all, if you did, that would be a extraordinarily significant advancement as far as figuring out what to do it. But most likely, of course, that won't happen, and instead it'll just go totally fine.
They bring everybody together, the same launch crew, like, all right, Frank, tell us what you did. Okay, well, I hooked up the valve here. Now I'm very cautious. I take the cigarette out of my mouth, and I set it here when I do that. And then you said get clear, so I got clear. What about the cigarette? Oh, yeah.
And then meanwhile, there's someone with a clipboard asking, like, all right, did anybody pray right before this happened? Yeah. No leads are going to be uncovered. Mm.
Somebody fueling like, and right, their cell phone. They say you're not supposed to, you know, fill up your gas tank while you have a cell phone. Because the sparks. I'm like, listen, if my cell phone's giving off sparks, I have a bigger problem than blowing up your gas station I got to deal with.
Yeah.
And then meanwhile, they're like going through all the crew, like, all right, Joe, you were there. Jeff, you were there. What about that new hire, Beth Jesus? No, I guess he quit. Oh, okay. What a hell of a mustache and glasses that guy had.
Beth Jesus, yeah. What about Benny the Pyro, Frank? What about him?
Timothy Rocket Blow Up.
Yeah. Or Sally Static Discharge.
Jesus.
All right.
Well, I'll tell you what, folks. No matter what news we get from SpaceX, you can rest assured that the news is always good for subscribers of our Patreon. That is patreon.com/weirdthings. Make sure that we continue to do this very show each and every week. Thank you guys, everybody who stuck with us over the changeover for a new month. That's always when everybody gets charged. It's always something that we take our time to give thanks to you, the dear listeners who make sure that we keep this show a rolling. Please join the conversation over there at patreon.com/weirdthings. We are only 8 patrons away.
There it is.
From, hey, 420 Patreons every day.
We appreciate your support. If you've thought about supporting, think on it. Less and do it. I didn't know where to go with that sentence.
Yeah, you know what? Just start supporting and then think about what you've done. That's what we recommend.
Yeah. Think about the things you've done.
Yeah.
Here's the list of people that I want to support us. A Lone Gunman. Jake UC.
Russia.
The Russians. Boeing and Lockheed Martin and Elon Musk himself.
So on the subject of the Musker, this speculation, is going in weird directions. I woke up this morning, a friend of mine sent me this silly little video of like, is this a drone in front? Like, no, it's a bird that's like bird really close to the camera. Like, you know, people don't understand. Here's the camera. Here's an object. There might be miles in between there. So anything that flies in between, maybe it's not next to the thing you're looking at.
I say correct them, but in the opposite direction. Say, no, sir, that's an orb. Will you please learn your cryptids?
Totally orb. Totally supernatural from another dimension. So there is Elon Musk put a post up today. He was updating everybody on the status of the Tesla autopilot. And basically, the long story short, they're shifting more to radar. They're building up a whole, you know, way to accumulate a lot more radar information. Explain such things as the one problem with radar is people are semi-translucent, but they're trying to build up a data cloud of that. And then in the last two paragraphs, he brings up an example of like when you have a really unusual case. Like, and he's been dealing with unusual cases lately. Like, I don't know, a UFO lands in a fog bank.
That's not what he said, is it?
Here we go. The net effect of this, combined with the fact that radar sees through most visual obscuration, is that the car should almost always hit the brakes correctly, even if a UFO were to land on the freeway in zero visibility conditions.
All right. Hi, it's me. Listen, Elon.
But go to last sentence. Last sentence. Yeah. Bryce, read the last sentence.
The car in front might hit the UFO in dense fog, but the Tesla will not.
Elon, we're the firm of Main Brushwood and Young. The investors have asked that we have a conversation with you about just your public relations. Look, if you were just a car company, this would be great. Have you seen the articles about you ruling Mars? Like, literally wanting to go to Mars to be the emperor of Mars? Can we maybe dial down the UFO talk in the Tesla talk?
I mean, but maybe, listen, every industry has its own little colloquialisms. There is a phrase in magic that specifically in reference to how much or how little you might have to prepare for stuff or have things on you that you could perform a trick naked on a beach, right? Like, sure. That's a phrase in magic. Maybe that's just what, a UFO landing in zero visibility conditions is just what, you know, that's just what self-driving cars, the manufacturers refer to this.
You know what? This is a great example, Justin. The problem is that anyone who is familiar with the phrase, who's a magician, most likely has aspired to at some point perform one of these tricks naked on a beach. And they're very proud and won't shut up about how they actually did that. With that in mind, we all have the ability to get naked and get on a beach. We don't all have the ability to fly rockets to Mars, so maybe let's cool it on the UFO talk.
So do you think it's an issue just because he has, like, he's a space guy, so it might be, like, revealing or newsmaking if he just drops a UFO reference into an official corporate communication?
I mean,
Elon Musk, shortly after the rocket blew up, somebody said, what about aliens? And Elon wrote back, wasn't me.
Ha! he is an alien. He's not born in the United States, right?
Acknowledged it, guys.
I assume this is just him speaking in the language that he lives and thinks in, and his head is in the space clouds. So of course, when you're going to think of what's an object that could miraculously and surprisingly appear in front of you, it's like, well, that's a UFO. And so then that's the metaphor you use.
Well, he knows what they look like too.
Well, how do you think he got here?
Yeah, duh.
I said, I do also like the fact that he just totally sacrificed that other car. That he was just like, yeah, whatever. The jerks who don't have Teslas in front of you will die.
Dude, but I guarantee you the first draft of this said, yeah, the Nissan Leaf that crashed into it will die, but not the Tesla Roadster behind it.
Dude. Do we want to get into this other self-driving car story, this Uber thing?
Sure.
Oh, yeah, no, this is super exciting. I'm actually really, really stoked about it. I think it's a responsible step forward in the reclassification of how we think of cars.
New York Times says that any day now, Uber will introduce a fleet of self-driving cars in Pittsburgh, making the former steel town the world's first city to let passengers hail autonomous vehicles. I also think that this might actually not be totally correct, because as I know it, you are just going to request an Uber and you might get a self-driving car, at which point it would be free.
Well, the articles I read said you'll request, and then as if you won a lottery, it's yes. Like, hey, you could get a free ride in one of these Ubers or a regular Uber.
Yeah, yeah. So basically, yeah, you'll get a yes-no kind of thing. Although... I don't know how much I can say. There are cars, and as the New York Times goes through, there are self-driving cars here on the road right now in Pittsburgh that are they are mandated to have somebody in the car behind the wheel, but they are being piloted by themselves. This has led a few people to wonder whether or not Pittsburgh, the city, and the mayor specifically, is being too cavalier with this. This did not go to some citywide vote. There hasn't been a tremendous amount of prep with local law enforcement, with local fire and rescue and stuff like that. It's not like they have a back door to see where everything is. So a few people are a little worried I mean, obviously we are all very self-driving car friendly on this show, but do you think that this is maybe a little high stakes considering Uber's mantra has by and large been better to beg for forgiveness than ask permission?
Remember the whole Gmail thing and it scans your Gmail like, oh, they're reading your email. Like, well, no, it's not. There were so many people upset because they didn't know what was going on. And here it's like, yes, these cars have autopilot and their own self-driving thing, but there are people behind the wheel. So what's the problem?
Well, this is a manifestation of a long-term scientific problem called the precautionary principle, right? This is the entire reason that people were saying, don't administer the smallpox vaccine until it can be proved to be safe. And meanwhile, luckily, most of the world said, no, we're losing millions of people a year to smallpox. We're just going to administer the vaccine. Hey, that's a lower number than we had the year before. We have a new disease in the world, and it's called a million people die every year from humans driving cars. And no, we can't prove that the robot driving cars will be perfect, but we can, but by allowing places like Pittsburgh, these natural laboratories to start off, we can prove that, guess where there's been, 1% the fatalities of when humans are driving, when there's Uber cars.
But Brian, there is a dissenting voice here, and I think that this is the full weight of the old gray lady, the paper of record, the New York Times. They have found in a story that puts editorial voice into the idea that maybe this has gone too far. Their number one dissenting quote is, I feel like we were pushed into being part of this by the city, by Montana Michalik, a recent college graduate who works at a cafe in the city's South Side neighborhood. Because that's the number one person that you can get on the record to say that maybe this isn't the best idea is Montana, a recent college graduate who works at a cafe in the city's South Side neighborhood.
Man, and that's like you looked at behind the lines and you see that reporter like just searching for like why where did this quote come from? Why? What was the how did they get involved in this? Why? And like, yeah, sure. Okay, but it's one of those like, what? I think we should have a choice in these things. No, if I have a car and it can self-drive and I'm still driving it, then did you complain when BMW started putting self-driving features in their cars? Did you say you should have a choice? Did you try to ban that from the city?
I mean, listen, this is, I think it's an interesting story to look at because Uber's got a certain reputation, right? That they are people that have oftentimes had
play fair, they play fair by the rules.
Oh,
that they,
I thought you were telling Justin to play fair. I was like, I don't think he's over the line on this one. They've got a bit of a
rep. I mean, listen, they are contentious with local governments,
sure.
and oftentimes they have, from me, gotten a pass because you look at their cavalier attitude toward these laws, quote unquote, and you say, well, yeah, because a lot of these laws are stupid and the protection is for cab lobbies and nobody is really a super gigantic fan to cape up for cabs. But I do think that this is a little different. I am for it. I'm excited that Pittsburgh has gone as a whole hog into being a tech friendly city. I wish that my state of California would be a little bit looser when it comes to people being able to test out self-driving cars. But I think it is something that, you should think about it, right?
Well, so here's the brilliant part of it being Uber making this push is because we're all acting like the next obvious step is, oh, the next car I'm going to be ought to be a car that would be able to drive itself. But I don't think that's the case. The whole transportation as a service thing, like we don't actually care about cars. What we care about is our ability to go wherever we want, whenever we want, in a reliable amount of time with the minimum number of breakdowns and delays. And if that's really what Uber is after, then it makes a lot of sense for them to already, right out of the gates, start offering essentially that by way of robot. I mean, go ahead.
Brian, I'm personally with you, and that's what I want out of a car. But you say that in the Jalopnik forum.
They're all wrong. Hey, hi, Jalopnik, it's me. Take this quote out of context. I know you guys think that you love cars. You don't love cars. What you love is freedom. And freedom is represented by your car's ability to work and function and take you everywhere you want. And at some point, you're going to feel like your love of cars is rather silly, just like your love of album. Hi, Vinyl Forums. I know you guys think you love records. You don't. You don't love LPs. What you love is the sense of freedom and wonderful bliss that comes from listening from a transcendent artist from a different time.
I drive an automatic. I always drive an automatic. I drive an automatic because I'm not a caveman. It's not a lot of manuals. It's not a lot of these cars that have this because some people want to be able to do that. And that's alien to me. Like, for me, like, if I can just press play and get there, I'm good. But there are people who really, they car is a representation of them. A car to them is part of their ego. It's part of their identity. You know, I've never spent more than $400 on shoes. I've never spent more than probably than $200 on a pair of shoes. A lot of people out there that pay a goddamn lot of money on shoes. I don't get it, but they do it.
They're not buying shoes. What they're doing is a sense of moral superiority, the fact that they're able to wear an ostensible, conspicuous consumerism item that feels good to them and reminds them that they're better than everyone else. Likewise, even people who love motorcycles, you don't love motorcycles. What you love is knowing that you can decide in your bedroom that you want to be riding a motorcycle and 30 seconds later be on a motorcycle. Once that becomes possible without having to keep one in your garage at all times, there will be no need to own a motorcycle.
I love the idea that Brian has this encyclopedic knowledge of what everything else means, like that we could just name off like a ham sandwich. You don't love ham sandwiches.
You don't love ham sandwich. What you love is that sense of satisfaction in having a full belly. You love knowing that you don't have to worry about what you're going to eat for the next 2 to 3 hours. I might have been taking some sales courses recently.
Gentlemen, you know what I love.
What's that?
I love to know what happens next on Journey Quest.
All right, do we finally bust out on the road? Is this
hashtag
happening?
Journey Quest. Hashtag Journey Quest. Everybody right, go so ahead. Hashtag in the chat room.
Last time we were there, we were in the town of Salvation 2. Because it turned out that the first attempt into Salvation was actually a dream sequence, but then everything played out exactly like it happened.
Thank goodness, because otherwise I would have set fire. I mean, someone might have set fire to this podcast.
Oh, no, listen, that would not have happened. So Justin brought the battle van into the town of Salvation, and Diamond Club Steve was trying to secretly gave Brian a message, which Brian immediately picked up on the fact that he was trying to be secretly messaged and signaled. Brian was not obtuse about that at all. Totally got it, but he played it really, really, really cool. Played it really cool, like he didn't understand that Steve was trying to signal him for help. So finally, after eating mini Boston creams with notes inside of them, Brian finally read one of the notes.
Yeah, you're saying Brian. I think you mean Justin. I was tied up. Yeah, I was not a part of this whole thing. But no, yeah,
Brian.
Sure.
Brian was and has been trying to crawl toward me while Diamond Club Steve attempted to signal me with a message in a donut. I refused to eat the donut because I thought it was poisoned. Eventually, I realized that I had to open it up to see it. I realized that he was indeed being held captive, and he was under instruction to kill us and take our battle van.
I forgot to mention, you know, in this, you guys decided to switch names too. I totally forgot that detail, but now you switched them back. It's
okay,
fine.
Good.
Okay. So technically, so now, I was correct. Just pointing that out.
Now, I am trying to stage a daring rescue attempt by ramming the battle van into the Dunkin' Donuts, rescuing both Diamond Club Steve and Brian Brushwood.
Still tied up, by the way. Thanks to everybody who made, thank you all for all your letters and emails saying that I wish Brian was anything but tied up, but here I am.
Maybe they like that.
That's fine. Who is around me right now as I look up from my tied chair?
So you're looking up. You've got your face is like been deep into. Do you like the lemon cream? Do you like that?
Dude, I ain't eating none of that stuff. You guys know I'm on a diet. I don't care how many donuts are around me. I gotta get skinnier. Now I've lost a lot of weight.
It's the apocalypse, Brian.
I know.
You've been eating rats.
There's never gonna be a better time than now for me to make that pattern interruption. Don't judge me. I'm not having your donuts.
So, Brian, you got your face down. You're maybe smelling a donut and getting a little powder on your nose. Just sort of like, you're like, hey, everybody, your hands are tied. I'm not eating it.
Yeah, yeah. No, I mean, I would do that. That's accurate. That's what I'm doing right now. But who's everybody around me? So
you got Diamond Club Steve is in front of you. Yeah. There's two girls in the back behind, you know, who are making donuts and stuff. And you're like, oh, you got a little bit on your nose. And you're like, let me lick this. Just lick this off my because this is really unseemly to have this on my lips. So you're licking the lemon off of your lips. You're not eating it, Brian.
Sure. Now, real quick. I know we're about to stage a daring escape, but it occurs to me, I've heard, and I know this isn't everybody, but I've heard that when some women get pregnant, they get a little kind of low-grade hormonal randy at all times. They like, and you're telling me none of them have come up trying to cop a feel of nothing.
Can we also understand that I'm barreling toward the Dunkin' Donuts?
I know. This is happening, which means I only have a few more seconds to explore this before the battle van blasts through when we escape with Diamond Club Steve.
So your face, you look up from the lemon cream that you're totally not eating, even though now there's like bits of, you know, yellow lemon on your nose, and you're looking at the girls behind the counter, and you're like, hey, did you know that when women are pregnant, they're horny? That's what you end up saying.
Okay, first of all, that's not what I said. What I said is... hey, babies. How y'all doing?
I'm driving as fast as I can toward the Dunkin' Donuts. I'm about to shatter glass and steel all over everybody. And
at this point,
powdered sugar, you're trying to get your rocks off?
All right, I know this is like, hey, everybody. And I just bury my face in all the powdered sugar donuts, and I rub my face all over, and I look up, and I'm like, I'm Scarface. Ha, ha, ha.
And you spell out with your tongue, you know, not eating the donut. Weird. Diamond Club Steve grabs you by the neck, pulls you free of the table. And you're like, I'm not eating it. I'm not eating it, you say, as he pulls you to the floor. Battle van rams into the front of the Dunkin' Donuts, splatters glass everywhere. Booths go flying. People are shrieking. There's Bavarian creams all over. It's pure anarchy. And
during the chaos... I eat one of the donuts.
Yeah,
just like, one.
Nobody will see
just
me.
Just one. Nobody has to know, but that's just
so
for me.
I kick open the battle van door. I have a gun drawn, and I am trying in the smoke and chaos, trying to find Brian and Diamond Club Steve. Do I find either or both of them?
You find them both there. Diamond Club Steve's picked Brian up off the ground. Brian's face is covered in about five different kinds of donuts, and there's a crawler sticking out of his mouth.
That's fine.
I attempt to get him into the battle van. Do I get him into the battle van?
Wait. First of all, can you untie me? I'm so glad to see you, Justin. Will you please untie me?
In the van!
I can't move!
Plenty of time to untie you!
I'm Marcel Marceau, pretending I'm a mime who can't get in the van because I'm tied to a chair.
Brian's like, I can't move. Yeah, I inchworm my way out the door, across the street,
voice.
And almost to
what
the battle van.
What voice is this? I'll speak for myself, whatever voice this is. Justin, untie me!
I do not untie Brian. Me and Diamond Club Steve move him physically from, we carry him into the van and throw him into the van.
Briefly annoyed, I start looking around and seeing what the women are doing. What are the women doing?
They just fled out the back. They just ran out the back.
I sigh world weary at yet another love lost.
Jesus Christ, Brian. And then, we're in a daring rescue attempt. So if you can please dial that Sylvia Plath down a little bit. We're trying to Bronson our way out of here.
Okay. Well, then wait. What part of Bronsoning involves not untying me? Why will you not at least throw me in the... Don't throw me. Gently put me down. Pick it up.
I throw Brian as hard as I can into the battle van.
And he lands on his bicycles.
I do have my bicycle. All right, so sitting there in the chair on the bicycles, leaning back, I ask, so what now, gentlemen?
Oh, we got to get the hell out of here, because I'm assuming that what they're doing, they're running out the back so they can make a perimeter or a blockade. So we got to pull this thing right out and try to hit the open road.
That's great. Hey, if you don't mind, I'll man the turret up top. Oh, wait, I can't. I'm still tied for the third episode in a row.
All right. I tell Diamond Club Steve to untie Brian as I attempt to hit reverse course and start heading out of Salvation.
DCS.
So Brian can man his imaginary turret, which he never established.
I mean, look, it doesn't matter. The point stands. I could be helpful if you'd untie me.
Diamond Club Steve, is he able to untie Brian?
Unties Brian.
All right, good. All right, so I walk up, and as if we're coworkers on a lazy Saturday afternoon, I walk up, I kind of slap my hands on Justin's shoulders, and I roughly massage them, and I'm like, yeah, you feeling this? This is life on the road. This is action. You got this?
Donut-stained fingers massage his shoulders as Justin's backing out, pulling out of the Dunkin' Donuts. You turn around. Remember, we described this. It looks exactly like Hill Valley, the Universal Studios backlot. Exactly
sure,
like it.
Sure,
okay. Justin's backed up. Just turn around. He's heading. You guys are looking in the mirror, and you're feeling pretty good. Because you know what? You don't even see the snipers.
Well, okay. Well, first of all, let's talk about the battle wagon real quick. How secure are we from snipers? I mean, they can shoot. They can't see us.
No, I mean, they could shoot, but they might not know if you're where you're sitting. They could shoot the windows, but you don't see the snipers.
Well, that's great. Well, let's go then.
All right. So you guys you're driving, you're spinning around, you're heading out of Salvation 2.
Yeah. Me, Diamond Club Steve, and Brian. At a certain point, as we are outside of the city center, I snidely mentioned to Brian, like, oh, I guess we didn't care to bring that weird tramp that we picked up, a few cities ago. We lost her real quick.
This is the part where I start clapping my hands. I'm like, all right, keep it on cruise control. Steve, get over here. Team meeting.
No. We're trying to get out. Like, we're trying to get out of this.
We're getting out. We got this stuff on rails. Now's a really good time for us to evaluate. First of all, Steve, if we can have a conversation, if you want someone to get a secret message on a donut, maybe don't act like the donut is poisoned. You know, lay off on the heavy pushing. Justin, I really appreciate you saving my life. All right, anyone
now,
else?
Are you driving? Or are you parked right now?
Oh, no, we're driving. We're driving. We're trying to head out of. We are just out of the city center. We are trying to get out of the orbit of Salvation.
Justin, Steve, any other issues you guys want to bring to the table before we bust out for freedom to go rescue?
Steve's like, listen, you guys better go faster. You're not going fast enough. You don't understand.
I agree with Steve. We all need to tool up right now. Any weapon we can, go ahead and keep it in hand because we are not out of the woods and this thing can go south really quickly. I go pedal to the metal.
Okay,
Steve's like, remember how I told you they were like 30 like cheerleaders?
Yeah.
No, that's not quite true. They're actually the engineering department of Texas. They're like really good at welding and stuff. And you hear the sounds, like sounds of engines revving, motorcycles. And you look behind you and what do you see? A fleet of 30 different vehicles, motorcycles, cars, battle wagons, way better than yours. Some of them even have turrets, Brian.
Justin, real quick, not for me to judge, but you're trying to go fast, right?
Yeah.
Are you trying to go all the way fast as you can fast?
Yeah. What part of pedal to the metal makes you think that we're not going as fast as this thing will take us?
I'm sorry. I thought you were talking about riding a bicycle. Yes, that's very fast. Listen. Let's talk about this battle van. We got to disable the vehicles around us. I assume we have some sniper rifles or some kind of deer hunting rifles, right?
You brought what you brought. You did bring rifles.
Good. Okay. Steve, can I trust you with this?
Sure. You totally trust me.
Look me in the eye, Steve. Steve, you've been less than forthright. You're not gonna hide messages in the bullets and be sending those out, are you?
There'll be messages in the bullets, Brian.
Oh, but the messages will be, screw you, we hate you.
The message is death.
Okay,
the message is death.
Thank you. Justin, look, you focus on driving as fast as you can. I throw one rifle in each of our hands. Make sure each of us are stocked. Do we have any grenades or any kind of flashbangs or anything?
Where did you get them, Brian?
I don't know. It's not
the Matrix, Brian.
Yeah, no, we don't. We probably do have some kind of like auto. I mean, maybe I don't know, oil or something. I have no idea.
Well, what do we have? How about that?
We've got the simple weapons that we've always had.
Okay,
and so we have bicycles.
You're going down a highway. You look behind you, and there is just a humongous array of vehicles chasing out. Again, much better designed than your battle wagon. I mean, these women totally outdid you. And you've got inside your battle wagon, you've got your wagon, your battle van. You've got some ammo, some supplies. You brought some food. I think we brought a generator, so the air conditioner. You've got your podcasting equipment. You've got several bicycles. Steve's like, hey, do you want to throw the bikes out the back? Want me to do that? Like, that'll get in the way.
No. Okay, look, Steve, you weren't here for this. We had this discussion. The bikes stay, all right? All right, now, Andrew, let's talk about the landscape. This is West Texas, so I assume there's some ravines. What kind of day are – what time of day is this?
It's approaching nightfall, so it's golden hour. It's really cinematic, very, very beautiful and golden. We don't even need a color correction for it just to really appreciate that.
How far behind is the Armada?
Well, I would say – they were about 4 miles behind. Now they're about 3 miles behind.
Great.
And pretty soon they're top ending and they're gaining on you. And there's a big cloud of cinematic dust.
Sure. Like 15, 20 minutes, they're going to be upon us. All right. This is enough time for us to have a discussion. Justin, here's what I want you to do. Also, Steve, do you have to go to the bathroom? I think you have to go to the bathroom. Justin. Oh. None of us care about Diamond Club Steve, right?
That we don't care about Diamond Club Steve?
Right. So here's what I'm thinking.
Diamond Club Steve risked his life so we could be free. He could have easily just complied with these women
to us,
and murdered us.
He lied to us and seduced us into a trap. So here's what we're going to do. We're gonna look for a ravine. We're going to, I'm using air quotes here, crash. Maybe I'll knock out Diamond Club Steve first. We'll crash. They're going to see Diamond Club Steve behind the wheel, and we'll be gone. You know why?
I swear to God, if you say, because we'll be on the bikes, this conversation's over. We'll be on the bikes, this conversation's over.
I'm just saying, that would be a great magic trick.
You're not saying, because we'll be on the bikes. Tell me that is not what you are saying.
We can be on whatever you want to be, but the point is we won't be in the...
Conversation's over. Sit down. In fact, Diamond Club Steve, get out of the bathroom and tie Brian back up again.
All right.
All right, we do need to figure something out, though, because they're going to gain on us. And the only question is, do we have the speed to get far enough outside of town that they will not find it useful for us to be caught? Like, do they want to stay within their city town or within their area? Diamond Club Steve, do you think that they'll chase us no matter what? Like, what is this about for them?
I don't think they'll hold a grudge at all, guys. I don't think so at all. Are you kidding me?
Okay.
They built these vehicles to chase people down.
Diamond Club Steve, we are in a crisis situation. I already have Brian Brushwood, the Tour de France enthusiast. I don't need any sarcasm. Okay, so you have seen these vehicles. You understand what their raiding parties look like. What's the best way to defend against them?
Well, they think they've been waiting for an opportunity to hunt somebody down. There's a lot of anger there, guys. There's a lot of anger, a lot of pent-up anger.
So you're saying that there's no thing that we can do that would make us a better chance for survival?
You just ruin their Dunkin' Donuts. I don't know. I mean, go faster if that's not possible. I mean, here's your options. You're on a highway. You got a straightaway. I'm saying, like, they're tricky. There's a possibility that maybe they could have called ahead and set up a roadblock. You don't know what you're running into. You might want to go off-road. We got some wide open prairie that we can go on to, some just scrub you can drive through. Maybe we try to lose them there.
All right. I'm in. Let's go off-road.
Is that what you're going to do?
Yeah, I'm driving, so it doesn't matter what Brian, old, let's run our battle van over a ravine so we can bike our way to safety, Brushwood, says. I turn off
the
road.
The plan would work! Untie me!
So I'm just going to ask a question here. You realize that you're taking a vehicle that's not designed to really go off-road, and you're going to go off-road being chased by a bunch of vehicles that can go off-road.
I mean, he's not going to change his mind if that's what you think. This is just Robert Young.
So you're hurt.
All right. No. I think about it. I think about it again. That's a death sentence. We're not going to go off-road. We're staying. We're gonna punch it on the highway, and we'll take our chance with them getting closer and see how many we can take.
Good choice. But you look up ahead, and you see a roadblock.
Oh, God damn it.
Just keep going.
I mean,
all right. How many people are at the roadblock?
You don't see any people. You see a bunch of wrecked cars and everything else lined up around the roadblock.
Just by first glance, how wide is the roadblock?
The roadblock stretches across the highway and then off on either side. And then you might see some little glimmering bits of metal around the area even further out, suggesting what may look like things will pop tires.
Run into the roadblock. We'll jump out and lose ourselves in the desert.
Brian, get the bikes.
Yeah! Steve,
next
Steve.
Time on Journey Quest.
Yeah, there's no bike for Steve. He's going to have to.
That's right. Wait, don't tell him that yet, man. That's next week's
episode.
Hey, I'm not
in Cowboy.
Gentlemen, picks.
Hey, man, I got a pick. I talked about it last week, so I'm now 5 episodes into Narcos. It's about Narcos doing narco stuff. Lots of cocaine and selling it to kids. they charge a lot per ounce. It's great. It's great. It's great. It's great. And I don't know if I'm loving it more just because it's something I'm doing on the side while I'm answering 2,000 okay. emails, which we'll talk about in the after things. But just having it on makes me feel real good. I could look up and follow, like, oh, those are the good guys. And that's the bad guy.
Fun fact, Brian, is that I've been sitting here working on my author page project and doing a lot of coding, and I'll just watch movies while I do stuff. I look for sort of like TV shows I can just play in the background while I do that, which I can't do when I write, but I can do that with coding. And I said, oh, let me try Narcos. So I started Narcos. I would say it was 15 seconds in. I'm like, this looks too good for me to watch passively as I'm doing something else. I'm going to save this for like sitting down and watching it.
Yeah. Well, number one, that's the right impulse as far as the quality of it. It's also problematic in that I keep pausing my work because fully 2/3 of all the show is spoken in Spanish, which means I have to stop what I'm doing to look over and read what they're saying. Still worth it. So very good. It's I'm really excited, Andrew, to hear what you think when you dive in.
I gotta read.
Which, by the way, that is one of the criticisms of the show, is that apparently all the actors have like wildly different accents, and if you live in Colombia, it would be like, you know, something set in Kentucky, and you've got a West Coast, Boston, a Canadian accent all over the place. But luckily, I don't know the differences between any of that, and so it all works for me.
Could be Esperanto for all we know.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, I want to pile on a pick here, and that is the game Reigns that Andrew suggested. It is really, really fun. And I really, really like it. And it has fit in kind of perfectly into the hole in my life that is the 10 minutes before I fall asleep on a plane and the 10 minutes after I wake up, but we have yet to land on a plane. It is great.
So what kind of device is this on?
This is iOS, I know for sure. I don't know any reason why it wouldn't necessarily be on Android, but... as you can see here being played, effectively it is all different yes-no decisions, A-B decisions, basically, where you are making the decisions that faces any king, right? You are trying to balance out the power you are giving or the demoralization you are giving to the church, the people, the army, and your treasury. It's also on PC, apparently, but... It's got a really, really great, editorial sense. The story's really fun. I've enjoyed how much it's evolved as you continue to play it. But it's got a great sense of humor. It's really well designed. I always love these kinds of games that are not about how big you can do it, but rather just how dense you can make a fairly rad idea.
It is such a delight that in... 2016, you get a game like that, which becomes pretty successful, becomes a bit of a hit, that is it's a yes or no decision. It's like Tinder. You just swipe back or forth to make your decisions, and it's enjoyable, it's engaging. It shows you that a good game is a good game. There's a reason why board games are still popular. There's a reason why when the creator of Mario took the stage at the Apple keynote, people went ballistic because... that thing is, you know, it's eternal. You know, I'm excited like that they're putting Mario on the iPhone, and it'll be probably it'll be on Android and all that too. And that it's, you look at the game and it looks a lot like the original, you know, Mario Brothers, but it's basically designed for an iPhone where you press a button to make him jump. Other than that, he keeps running. And I love that thinking through gameplay now of going, okay, there's a great game. If I'm going to be sitting in front of a computer and I have a fast graphics card, there's great games for figuring that out. There's great gaming if I'm going to be holding a mobile device and I only have one hand free. There's a great game for when I can listen to somebody else and just do something visual. There's a great game when I want to read into it. I just love that idea that we're getting into that space of these games filling different kinds of spaces. So,
I love it. Reigns. Rain.
The plural of to reign.
There we go. The Roman Reigns. Let's go.
The music is by Disaster Piece, and he's the one who did the music for the movie It Follows, which I loved.
It's I think my favorite little thing is that everybody talks when you first get their thing, but it's in like some weird language. So you just like get, it's just these series of like
Charlie Brown, you know.
Kind of like Simlish, or you get the same thing in Civilization Revolution on iOS, which is also great.
It's brilliant. It's such a weird psychological thing that you're like, all right, I get there's somebody talking to me, but I'm reading this. There's a lot going on there. I'm really impressed by that. My pick is, I've been watching this passively as I've been doing something else. I don't know if it's a show that would fully engage my attention if I was watching it directly, but I've still enjoyed it. I thought it's pretty good. Is Mr. Selfridge, the series starring Jeremy Piven, where he plays an American impresario who opens up a store in London, this big, huge, one of the first big department stores there. And there's been several episodes to it. Really good cast. Basically, it's this set like 1915 through 1919, I think. And it's just a neat sort of story of kind of like what London society is like at that time. The changes going through there, I think it's a very good, Jeremy Piven sort of play as far as a character they're playing, the sort of brash American sort of doing what he does really, really well. And I think it's enjoyable. So it's on right now. It's on Amazon Instant, so you can watch it for free if you have the account there. I'm just going to point out that it's created by Andrew Davies, who's written a lot of good of other stuff. He originally did the original House of Cards, and so he's a talented writer who's done some pretty neat stuff. And Selfridge is a real department store, so it's just sort of the loose story of the real Henry Selfridge.
Right.
Henry
on.
Selfridge. So American, went to England, decided to found this great department store.
Dude, I'm in.
So there you go. Those are our picks, and that's our show. It's been weird.
Sorry, Russia.
Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.